We're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, third canto, chapter 30, entitled Description of Adverse Fruitive Activities, text number 6. Atma Jaya Sutagara Pasu Dravina Bandusu Niruda Mularidaya Atmanam Bahumanyate. Atma, body. Jaya, wife. Suta, children. Agara, home. Pasu, animals. Dravina, wealth. Bandushu, in friends. Nirudamula, deep-rooted. Hridaya, his heart. Atmanam, himself. Bahu, highly. Manyati, he thinks. Translation. Such satisfaction with one's standard of living is due to deep-rooted attraction for body, wife, home, children, animals, wealth, and friends. In such association, the conditioned soul thinks himself quite perfect. Purport. This so-called perfection of human life is a concoction. Therefore, it is said that the materialist, however materially qualified he may be, is worthless because he's hovering on the mental plane, which will drag him again to the material existence of temporary life. One who acts on the mental plane cannot get promotion to the spiritual. Such a person is always sure to glide down again to material life. In the association of so-called society, friendship and love, the conditioned soul appears completely satisfied. So we're living in a world which is based on the principle of this verse. A polished world where suffering is hidden, where crippled people are locked away far from the sight of common men, where death is being masqueraded as much as possible, where everything is made look pleasurable, although suffering is a fact, where everything becomes like shallow, where happiness is external and not a deep realized quality. That is modern times. So people indeed are convinced that everything is wonderful, and even if it's not 100%, then they think just we're working at it, and the remaining percentage we will also cover. The materialistic conception of life is foolishness. Prabhupada calls this world a fool's paradise. And Prabhupada was walking on the morning walk and seeing a playground for children called Children's Fairyland, right? Fairy tales, fairyland. So it's a dreamland, right? The ideal dreamland, Children's Fairyland. And Prabhupada looked at it and he turned around and pointed to the city and said, Adult's Fairyland. And in this way, it is indeed Adult's Fairyland. Everyone is dreaming, right? It is Saturday afternoon and everyone will just go to that city, and there is a passion which is overwhelming. I remember that I used to live in Australia, in New Godadesh, which was so far away from the world on the farm. You had to drive from a village with 30 houses over a sand road 80 kilometers into the bush, right? And it's just a big plain with some thorny bushes on it and lots of kangaroos and rabbits, and but no people. And there we were in the middle of nowhere with less than 20 devotees on this huge farm. And at one point, I stayed 3 months on the farm, and then I went to Melbourne. And I came downtown Melbourne, and I saw all the people decked out, you know, in their city clothes, you know. They're like the far out, the latest of the latest, state of the art, you know, just flashing their clothes. I mean, there were punks with colored spikes on their heads and chains and leather outfits. There were ladies with poodles on high-heeled shoes that you just wonder how can anyone possibly walk more than 3 steps on this, and they were doing it, right, very expertly and elegantly. And you just looked at it all and said, this is crazy. And what are these people doing on, like, this tiny little piece of land and getting so excited over nothing, right? Over, like, their own imaginary excitement, right? That's how it came across. You missed the point? No. Oh, yeah. Okay, sorry. No. You got it. Yeah. You know, that's, it hits you when you come from the contrast of, like, being out in the open plains, you know, nothing there, out there in the country, and you've just been so much in nature. I had several times this contrast experience there, because we used to also eat vegetables from the garden, right? And, you know, that's all we had. And you just picked these vegetables from the garden. And then I came into a supermarket, and then I saw all these shriveled up, dried, old things lying there, looking at it like, my God, you know, this is not fresh at all. When you actually take things straight, we had grapefruits straight off the tree. Now, I was never such a grapefruit fan, you know. Like, grapefruit, yeah, it's all right. But grapefruit off the tree was ecstatic. Right? Anyway, so we're living in our artificial happiness, in our artificial world, our man-made paradise. But it is a fool's paradise. Of course, living on the farm is another variety of fool's paradise, because the entire world is never meant to be a permanent residence. Right? Anyone who takes the material world very serious is a fool. Right? Anyone who thinks that this world is that important has missed the point. Prabhupada said, to make the best use of a bad bargain, and that's about all we can do here. Because our natural abilities, the ability of the spirit soul, which can express itself in with unlimited spiritual power in a spiritual body, has now been reduced to the pathetic existence of a material body, which is really something else. Right? Every material body is weak and very limited, and all of our powers are just becoming are just with time being destroyed. In the changing bodies diorama, for a little while we see how the living entity is growing bigger and bigger and stronger, and this is just simply the illusory energy before one is gradually reduced to the state of a skeleton, and in between there are many pathetic conditions. Old people that cannot eat properly anymore and just spill it all over their clothes, and, you know, and just like you see these kind of things where you think, my God, you know, do I ever have to go through this of witnessing my own condition of becoming senile? Fortunately, as Vaishnavas, we live in another reality. And this other reality, the reality of the spiritual world, that we have to thoroughly realize. We have to deepen our vision. Not only do we have to see beyond the body and see that within every single body there is the eternal spirit soul, but even we have to see everywhere Lord Krishna, and how Krishna is connecting everything and anything, sutra mani ganai va, as the invisible thread on a string of pearls. Lord Krishna, who is everywhere and anywhere, we have to constantly witness Him, and just whenever we have the opportunity, offer whatever comes our way to Him and use it for His glorification. Just as after a long time, not having been here, I appreciated again the painting that Chaitanya Charan made, you know, of like Jagannath Puri. When you're here every day, it's just the backdrop. But when you haven't seen it for a long time, it's kind of invoking Jagannath Puri. It really is. And I'm thinking, that's what he should be doing. Just make paintings like this and invoke the spiritual thing. And devotees should buy them. And if they don't buy them, I'll become his agent. I'll tell everyone, buy a painting. You know, buy one. These paintings are not ordinary. These paintings are powerful. Right? These paintings will change your life. Such a temple is there to testify of the glories of the Lord, and it is simply to transform our dull brains to one day register the point that Krishna is really everywhere. Right? So, to have such a painting is a great, great blessing. Yes, all the painters should make lots of such paintings and just, we'll promote them, don't worry. Just make the paintings. Then, everything will become, the whole world can be made auspicious by such, transcendental glorification of Lord Krishna. So this is our aim. As I was in Vrindavan this year, more than ever before, I got a bit into a mood of taking time to just meditate on Krishna and just chant and just meditate on holy places, which is all more in the spirit of bhajan, but not just in the spirit of meditating on such places for one's own inspiration, but in a mood of like offering the mind to Krishna, offering the senses to Krishna, offering anything we have to Krishna. Sometimes we're running around so much offering things to Krishna. We can try and maintain a temple for Krishna, and there are many things in the temple, right? Somebody went to a shop and bought that little round table and was thinking, oh, that would be nice for on the altar, right? And it's like, so someone went through all the austerity of shopping to get that table, right? And in this way, working with the material energy. But sometimes we just withdraw a little bit from that. And it's just our body that we are offering to Krishna. Our gross body, our material body. We offer our tongue in service to Krishna. We offer our mind in service to Krishna. We offer our senses in service to Krishna. And this is important because by doing this, right, then when we are interacting with the material energy, then our mind is fixed and naturally we are not being tempted by the material energy, and rather we offer everything in the service of Krishna. So this direct association with Krishna of offering the senses, the mind and the body in the service of Krishna through hearing, chanting, remembering, right, are the three particular aspect of the Bhagavad Vidhi, Bhagavad Sravana. Yes, this is very important that we go deep into this path and give some meaning to it. We may chant in so many ways. We may speak softly. We may even sometimes chant in the mind. We may sing out loud, but with appreciation. Devotion and appreciation are very closely related, because devotion is a very natural thing which must come from the heart, and it comes out when there is deep, genuine appreciation about how wonderful Krishna is, how nice the process is of glorification of Krishna. So this we have to develop, this spirit of relishing our spiritual activities that we are doing in the service of Krishna. Matchita matgata prana bodhiyantas parasparam katayantas chamamnicha tusyanticha ramanticha. My devotees are always engaged with all their hearts in hearing and chanting about my pastimes and glories, and while doing so, they are experiencing great enjoyment and satisfaction in this. So, it also said that devotional service is susukkam kartam avyayam. It is joyfully performed. It is not a process of constantly walking in the midst of irresistible material temptations and preaching to our mind, this is Maya, this is Maya. You know, like control your senses. It's very important to control the senses, because if you don't control the senses, then you will fall prey to the illusory energy. You will be crushed by the motes of material nature and suffer and suffer and suffer and suffer and suffer and suffer. All that is all good and well and true also. But such a meditation cannot keep us going. We need the higher level of relishing and experiencing the taste of nectar. This taste of nectar is everywhere in devotional service. It doesn't matter what we do. But obviously, it is especially in directly hearing and chanting. And there we have to find it. And if we are too restless to find it there, because our mind is still not convinced that one cannot enjoy in the material world, and because we think that there are so many things that are too attractive, then it's difficult to fix the mind in hearing and chanting. But we must make it a culture. This culture is very important. This culture of hearing more and more about Krishna continuously will change everything. This culture of bringing in beautiful paintings about Krishna, this culture of worshipping the deity, this culture of every day reading Srimad Bhagavatam, or every day Bhagavad Gita, or every day Chaitanya Charitamrita. This culture is what will save us. This culture will build up to a strength that will surprise us. At one point, it will just break through, and it will suddenly be something like, well, here we are in this time of the year where the sky is gray, right? Lots of times. So, you know, suddenly it is like the sun is breaking through from behind the gray clouds, right? Suddenly, we may read for a long time, we may serve for a long time, but suddenly we may realize, yes, Krishna is wonderful. Yes, Krishna consciousness is wonderful. Yes, it is all nectar. It really is. Right? That is the point where the sun will start shining in our spiritual life. It is very nice. Then one naturally becomes material attached. Then one naturally becomes liberated. But Srila Prabhupada said, that's not enough. It is not enough to just be liberated. He said there are so many processes given in the Vedic literature to becoming liberated. Swadhyaya Yajna, one can study Vedic literatures. Tapumaya Yajna, one can give in charity. And one can, in various ways, purify himself. Rahuganaita tapasanayati nachedya nirvapanat grihadva nachandasa chayvanalakni suryer bina mahatpada rajobhishekam. It is explained that there are so many processes. One can become renounced, vairagya. One can perform great austerities. Sit up to the neck in water, it says, in winter, or sit in the hot sun in summer, surrounded by a ring of fire. Yogis have done these things for the sake of becoming, of conquering the senses, of becoming detached. But all such processes can actually make one liberated from material attachment and material entanglement. But none of these processes can actually give us love of God, which is the aim, right? And which is what we want to cultivate, and which will come from devotional service. But devotional service is not some sort of automatic process which will gradually, which one day will then deliver us the reward, Krishna Prem. Devotional service is also a process of gradually becoming more and more aware of Krishna. Nama, rupa, guna, lila. It is explained that gradually one becomes aware of Krishna, of his name, of his form, and of his qualities, and of his pastimes. So gradually our understanding of Krishna is growing, our realization of Krishna is growing, how wonderful Krishna is growing. And as we are hearing more and more about Krishna, our faith in Krishna is naturally increasing. Because how else could it be? No one can be as wonderful as Krishna. And if one really hears more and more how Krishna is truly wonderful, then naturally one understands, yes, this is the Supreme Lord. There is no doubt about it. Right? This is Him. Because nobody can be so wonderful. If there is a God, this is how He should be. This is how wonderful He should be. And in this way, by hearing about Krishna, automatically we develop faith. One cannot possibly not develop faith. And automatically our faith will grow to the point where we cannot tolerate a moment of separation from Krishna. That is the spirit of the gopis of Vrindavan, who cannot tolerate a moment without full focus on Krishna consciousness. It will automatically come because it is wonderful. Krishna is wonderful. The whole arrangement of devotional service is wonderful. The whole arrangement of mercy that exists in this movement or the arrangement of the Lord is just really nice. Sometime ago when I was in South Africa, we were invited to participate in a Rath festival of a South Indian temple. They were pulling a deity of Venkatesh. Right? So it was like a small deity of Venkatesh, and the temple was a small Venkatesh Mandir. Venkatesh is the deity in Tirupati. And it is like a very big deity of Lord Vishnu, four-armed, right? And he has like a very big kind of tilak, which partially covers his eyes, right? It's a very awkward type of tilak, but it has some effect. It has a, seeing the face, it is like very strong impression. And it's like very big, and in Tirupati, and if you see that deity, is like very strong. And of course they have a whole thing that people, you cannot just see the deity as God, you know, so you have to wait. So there's queue system, and then when you get to the main door, they're beating big drums very slow. And then the queue is being led to the temple. And the darshan area is only very narrow. The temple is very big, but the darshan area is actually no bigger than this room. No bigger than this room. So really, and then the temple is very big around it. So people, you come, you're being led through the temple in different ways, and then suddenly you come around the corner and you get a glimpse of the deity, and you're being pushed in the queue, right, towards the deity, and then there's a fence in the queue, and they go around, and then, you know, people turn around backwards, and then on that side they walk away, and then psh, around the corner again, you know, like your last, your head around the corner, the last look, like that, right? So it's a quick darshan, but quite nice. So they had a deity like that, smaller. And the deity was being pulled, right? But they had no kirtan. They had no kirtan. Right? They were just pulling the deity, right? And it was, the mood was totally different, right? There were some hills also, and they had to pull the deities, and it was like a big austerity. Then they were very strict, so no shoes. So, you know, they're all walking on the road, right, and the sharp stones and this, that, like bare feet, you know, and this whole thing was very long also, this yatra. It was going from something like 10 in the morning till 6 at night or something. And then the people would pull a little bit, and then, tired again, and then they sit down, you know. So they'd invited us to do the kirtan. Right, so, you know, so there was such a difference, right? I mean, we were dancing all the way, having lots of fun, actually, right? And we were in the kirtan just lifted us, right? It just, like, lifted us beyond the bodily platform. We forgot, like, or forgot, but, you know, you just get swept up in the kirtan. And in that way, it was, we were having lots of fun, right? Lots of fun. It was a good kirtan. And, yeah, lots of fun. As you could see, and then we were dancing in front of all these people. You see this, you know, big austerity, right? So, like, you know, well, every once in a while we would do a whole dance in front of them, you know, to get them going a bit. And some got into it, you know, some smiles and things came out. But you could see how wonderful the Sankirtan movement is, and how wonderful the mercy of the Lord is, and how it is really all relishable, right? All relishable. And very, very nice. So, this is this movement, right? And one has to gradually change his eyes, because by nature, we tend to see things negative in the material world, because we have suffered, and then hankering, lamenting, is the condition of the conditioned soul, and therefore we are by nature think, this is too much, this is not enough, that's not good, this is not good, and it is. I know it is, right? I mean, I know all about it myself. So many things are just too much or not enough, right, in this world. But beyond that, right, there is this movement, and this movement is just perfect. It is just perfect. The spiritual side, I mean, not necessarily the material side, I would say. It's not that, you know, every temple in this movement is just perfect. I could think of a few temples that are not just perfect, right? In fact, I can't think of any temple that is just perfect in terms of its material arrangements. But in a spiritual sense, it is all perfect. It's all part of a perfect movement, and very, very nice. So if we get into that, just in looking for that side, for the Krishna side of things and of life and of the world and of everything, then all the other stuff, we'll tolerate it. You know, what can we say? We'll just tolerate it. I mean, you know, we're not going to pay much attention to it. We just go on. In this spirit, we can absorb ourselves more and more in always worshipping, remembering, serving Krishna in total ecstasy. So, if there are any questions, I'll try. to answer. I guess if you're totally senile, read. Well, I mean, okay, but seriously senile then. If you're seriously senile, maybe. Yeah. Maybe then. I think this, generally speaking, this starving to death idea is really reserved for people who are kind of hopelessly ill, cannot really recover, right? Then that would be relevant. I don't think we should do it too quick, you know. Then it gets a tinge of suicide. And where the fine line is, who can say that? Where the fine line is, you know, like where it's all right and where it's not all right, you know. I mean, you can ask many devotees, what is the fine line? And one will say the fine line is here, and another will say, well, it's there. I think you have to decide for yourself, and you have to consult at that time with some senior Vaishnavas. I don't think we should just fast ourselves to death, you know, because we're having a flu or, you know, or something like that, right? Or just because we're getting a little senile. As long as we can chant Hare Krishna. Yeah, chant Hare Krishna. What does it matter? Be senile and chant Hare Krishna. Yeah, as long as you're chanting Hare Krishna, it's okay. I'm already going senile, so what can I do? I can't even remember names anymore. What's your name again? So yeah, life is like that, you know. Slowly, you just lose it, right? I mean, you know, somebody may have a motorcycle accident and a bad knee, right? Then, you know, yeah, then some rough dentist just extracts two teeth. There you go, you know. One's just like some false teeth, right? You know, well, a little accident, a glass eye, you know. And like, yeah, we had a doctor, you know, and when we were kids, he had a glass eye. It was like, God, it stare, I'd all the time stare to his glass eye. You could really see it was a glass eye. It's like, total, God, what a glass eye. Yeah. My mother said he was a real good doctor, but I was wondering, you know, a glass eye. Can he be a real? There seemed to be something, some contradiction there, you know. A real good doctor with a glass eye, right? That's an instinctive suspicion, you know. I think, I don't know about this doctor. Anyway, you know, it's like that. The body is like a car. And just like your car, you know, slowly breaks down, you know. You have a new car and then there's a scratch on it and after some time it's a wreck, you know. So, that's how it goes. So, I guess you get used to it, you know, to be an old senile rambling, personality. Yeah. So this fasting to death business, I think, is reserved for, people that are really fatally ill. You know, then why prolong, right? When the cancer thing is growing in your throat, you know, and you know it's going to strangle you in not too much time, you know. Yeah. Forget it, you know. There are different kinds of responsibilities. There are personal, private, individual responsibilities, such as our chanting and hearing and all that. And then there is a responsibility of looking after Prabhupada's institution. There was a time when everyone was just very much part of that, and now it's a time when a lot of people are interested in the first part, taking care of their private responsibilities, but not so much of the responsibilities towards Prabhupada's institution. Well, those who are active in Prabhupada's institution can contemplate on that and can see how we can make Prabhupada's institution more attractive, right, for people to take responsibility, rather than just, you know, going in a kind of a moralistic approach from,
you should be taking more responsibility, you know, in Prabhupada's movement. You have a debt to Prabhupada. Do you realize that?
Yeah, I do. People might say, yeah, I appreciate. Yeah, I do. I have to do something. I will. But meanwhile, they're still not coming forward, you know. So why are people not coming forward, right? What is it? What's wrong with them, you know? So many times we've had this feeling, what's wrong with the devotees, you know, that they don't care for ISKCON and the institution, for the temple, etc. Well, I think if, as long as we have this attitude of what is wrong with them, there may be something wrong with them, I'm not saying there's not, but still, we have to first look what's wrong with us, right? What's wrong with us? What are we doing wrong in the temple, right? That people don't just line up, you know. I came in Prague one time, and there was, we were going to the restaurant, and I came in the street of the restaurant, and there was this whole large group of people and a long line in the street. And I'm looking like, God, what's going on here? Is there some sort of rationing going on? You know, like in India, you see these lines sometimes and people are getting some coupon, you know, for like some extra, some goods, you know, that are hard to get. I think like, well, maybe in the communist regime, it was like that. And maybe they still have some sort of coupon system here, you know. It must be, right? Ration card, you know. I also had ration card in Vrindavan. Ha. Huh? Yes. Yes. But I yes. So anyway, like that, you have your ration card. So I thought it was like something like that, but then it turned out that it was, the line was going straight to our restaurant. I'm thinking like, wow, you know, this whole big line, restaurant's full, and there's a huge big line of hundreds of people waiting for the restaurant. I'm thinking like, wow, this is pretty far out. Right? So it should be like that also here, right? Why not, you know? Like, there should be like a big line as soon as you come on the Van Hillegardstraat. It should be a big line of people, and you just see them all waiting. It's just like, God, what's going on? It's the old people that want to come in the temple and have to wait, you know, till some go out. One can go in when another one goes out because it's so full. Something like that. Something, I don't know if you remember, the Sunday feast, when we brought the deities from Radhadesh, I mean, I remember it was packed like it's never been here, right? It was so packed, it was just inconceivable that it could be so packed, this place, right? It was the most packed it's ever been. It was packed, right? So rather than trying to, instill a sense of responsibility in people, you know, like by preaching to them, you should be more responsible. You'll find that that's very difficult, you know. You preach and you just bash your head against the wall, and after a while, the preacher gets tired, you know, from that kind of preaching. So we have to create inspiration. Right? We have to inspire people. By letting them do things that they are inspired about in the temple and involving them in different ways. So we have to think like that. Inspiration is the key. You know, if somehow or other inspiration is part of the equation, then people will start taking responsibility. So you have to make it very, very inspiring here. Amazingly inspiring. So it means you have to be very creative and do like interesting things and let other people do interesting things, and to be very careful that it doesn't become the same old routine that is there every week and every day and like all that. It has to be dynamic and new and with a lot of energy and all these kind of things. So, yeah, if you want to make it a success, that's what it is. Like,
festivals will attract people. Let them partake in it. Let them do things. Parents are real fired up when their children are in a play. Right? You know, they become suddenly, they come forward after that to take responsibility. So many involved people inspire people to, in the spiritual things, and involve them in the nectar. And then, after having had a lot of nectar, then they'll be ready to take some duties also. Something like that, I think, has a better chance than just trying to appeal to the sense of duty. Some people have a big sense of duty, but most people feel like, well, you know, I mean, I understand, but I also have to look after myself. Yeah. Or other varieties, I don't know what all the reasons are. Genuine reasons. Kuranga. Not all. Some fall down. The jiva has the capacity to fall down. Krishna has this independence within him, right? Krishna has independence. And it is said that therefore his part and parcel must also have this independence. So, the fall down is so insignificant. So insignificant. It's just some people who don't want it, who are still not taking up the process of devotional service, who are lamenting like that, see? Yeah. So it's someone who sits on the bench, you know, watching the football game and says, why can't I play eternally? You know, it's not fair. But if as soon as you get in the game, you know, you don't ask questions like that anymore. This is a question for a bench sitter or a fence sitter. I encounter that also sometimes. Yeah. Krishna inherently creates, or the living entities exist in Krishna's image and have Krishna's qualities. So, it is sometimes stated that this independence in the living entities is there because it is in Krishna also. Therefore, it must be there. Yeah. And then this independence of choice to serve him or not. Yes. This existence in the material world is insignificant. It's not so important. We make too much of it. That's our only problem. Yeah. We blow it all up to a big deal. Yeah. Avarambha laga kriya. Avarambha lagu kriya, it is called. It is said, making a big deal out of nothing. Right? That is material life. Yeah. It says, that's what we're doing here. Making a big deal out of nothing. All day long. Making a big deal out of nothing. It's all insignificant. So this person is making a big deal out of nothing and should just take up devotional service. He's still thinking about, to him the material world is important, see? Why are we fallen? You know? It's totally insignificant. Why are we in this material world? Yeah, who cares where we are? The material world is like, it's not important. Devotional service is important. Let's just do devotional service. How can we fall? Don't worry about it. Just do devotional service. You won't be fallen at all. On eternity, this little detour through the material world is just Just nothing. Like it says, you know, the existence of like the life of the demigods is just on eternity. It's just like a bubble in the ocean, right? So from our present perspective, our existence in the material world is so long and so big. And then we become fallen. And how can Krishna do all this to us? You know, I mean, God, we have to go through all this. But once we're looking at it from the spiritual perspective, we say, ah, it was just a moment that I had a funny dream. You know, I just woke up. It was somewhat of a joke. You know, look how awkward, yeah, it was. Yes, you understand? It's so insignificant. So it's still looking at it from the material side and giving it so much significance. Avaram balagu kriya. Bhaktrohi.
There seems to be two ways of looking at Maya. Yeah. The one you explained
just now,
it's just insignificant.
Yeah.
Too serious.
Yeah.
But on the other end, probably, what's the need to be afraid of Maya?
Yes.
Yes. That seems to be the other side of Maya.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Well, one is, as you say, you know, one is when you're looking at it from the material world, yeah, from the material perspective. We're in the material world. Now we're looking from the material perspective and say we've become covered by the material energy somehow or other. It's captured us, Maya. So, and Maya is very strong. We have to be very, very careful about Maya, about avoiding Maya, yeah. So in that way, we are taking the power of Maya very, very serious, right? But the other way is we're looking at it, at Maya from the spiritual perspective, right? And say, from the spiritual perspective, in comparison to spiritual life, you know, and the spiritual experiences, spiritual emotions, all the entire material experience, the entire material emotion has no meaning at all. Right? So looking at it from the spiritual perspective, we're remembering that it is, we're not taking it very serious. We're not like considering it a big deal. We're considering it's all insignificant, actually, the material world. But because we are conditioned by the material nature, and because we do see things from the material perspective also, therefore it means a big deal to us now. Everything. It does, you know, right? Somebody made a scratch on my car. You know, it's a big thing, right? Big thing, you know. My heart just crashed, right? I mean, hope not, yeah. So many things like that. So many things mean so much to us. This world is totally unimportant. Only Krishna, Krishna is important. Krishna, Krishna. Okay, any other question? Okay, go on the second question. How the living end comes here? I have no idea. I don't know. I don't know. Next question. How can we lose faith in Atmajaya Sutagara? How can we lose faith in body, wife, children, and home? I don't think that's our process. It's not our process. Our process is to engage wife, children, and home, and everything in the service of Krishna, right? And then Krishna will do the rest, right? Naturally, what will happen is that as we're doing that, our attachment to Krishna will grow. And as Bhishmadev was saying, that as the attachment to Krishna is growing, at one point there is no more room in the heart for anything else. It takes over the whole heart, right? The affection for Krishna gradually takes over everything. And then in the end there is no more room for anything else. It's just Krishna, right? So in that, that's how renunciation kind of becomes natural, right? Out of becoming absorbed in the service of Krishna, and everything else becomes small, as is said in Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's like going up in a plane, and the size of the material world shrinks, right? So as we're going up in devotional service, the size of material things shrink. You know, it all doesn't matter so much. My marriage. My kids, you know. My home. My money. You know, it's part of my life, all these things, and I take care, but you know, it's not the main thing. Krishna. That's what it's all about, Krishna. How can I make this kid, this worm of a kid, Krishna conscious? I don't know. You know. Right. Yeah.
Prabhupada says in the Nectar of Devotion that puts it all the way around. He says our love and propensity extends from like other friends and partners to nations, the whole world, but it's still not fulfilled until it's
yes.
Well,
there is love for everybody else, but still, there's love for the whole world, but one cannot exclusively then love one person anymore. You see, that kind of thing, you know, of like this one person, my love, you know, and all that, you know, the Frank Sinatra and all the other guys, right? You know. Strangers in the night, exchanging glances, romances, and all this kind of stuff, that disappears. Like Prabhupada explains how, why single out one kid, right, amongst all the kids of the world? My baby, you know, why don't you love all the babies of in the whole world, right? And when we love the elder people, why don't we love everybody equally? So, a truly Krishna conscious person has that broader love, that more embracing love of for all, right? And they really can no longer become focused in like a special loving relationship with a person in this world other than Krishna or Guru, right? Guru is a manifestation of Krishna, right? External manifestation of the Super Soul. And that can be Diksha and Siksha Guru, right? So there's love for Sadhu, right? Because Sadhu acts as Guru. So there's this, Krishna comes through the Sadhu. But the love for the Sadhu actually is really the love for Krishna, yeah? But the love for a person in this world, just because this person has a particular way, I like your sense of humor, I like, you know, I like the way you, the elegance with which you lift things, you know. I mean, yeah. I mean, I like, you know, all those things. That all wears off, you know. It all just disappears. Purified from that. Yeah. We can. We appreciate beauty in the material world, but we realize that in comparison to Krishna, it's just all a reflection. It's just all a reflection. If anybody has any elegance in you know, it's just comes from the ultimate elegant person, Krishna. Right? But yes, we appreciate. We appreciate Prabhupada's aristocratic features. You know, we do. Yes, we do. But no longer exclusively, you know, I love the way you walk, the way you talk, and, you know, all that. Material enjoyment. No, well, I mean, the material world is, in one sense, what it is, right? I mean, the material world is what it is. a place where there are where the three modes of material nature are present, and the living entities will be in the three modes of material nature. Right? Now there are different yugas that are predominated in different ways. So in the Satya Yuga, you know, you'll find maybe less crickets, right? I mean, I remember in that forest of material enjoyment, there's always the sound of the crickets, right? And it's compared to the people that are always criticizing you, whatever you do in the back, you know, backbiting, you know, like the backbiting, criticizing people, the buzz, right? Kind of an annoying sound, right? And it's like always there, right? So it's described like that, forest of material enjoyment. So I could imagine that in the Satya Yuga, that would be less prevalent than in the Kali Yuga, obviously, right? I mean, Kali Yuga is like, you know, it's like the age where this is like the crickets become louder, right? And I would think if there's a Hansa class of men in Satya Yuga, that it should practically almost be absent, right? I mean, it may be there a little bit as a sign of human weakness, because basically this Hridaya Durbalyam, this weakness of heart, is there in all the yugas, right? So therefore, it's there, but it's not predominating at that time. But as the yugas progress, it becomes more and more manifest. So now, it's Kali Yuga. It has to be like the worst of the forest of material enjoyment. It's not that we're going to have like a perfect society where people are not exploiting each other and all that. Oh no, it's not like that. No, it's not like that. And we ourselves even, you know, are contaminated with it. We are. And it's like, and it's going to be quite a job to become free from it. Yeah, I know that. Sure, sure. Yeah, if you have no faith in material, yeah. But that's where they always accuse us of that, you know. If you have no faith in material, it's like, you know, the materialist is saying, oh, but life is so beautiful. I mean, you know, to appreciate the beauty. I mean, this world is wonderful. And we say, yeah, you know, like, yeah. It's like all decorations of a dead body. Beautiful. Beautifully decorated. Right? Beautiful. Wonderful. You know, the flowers at the funeral are also very beautiful. Right? Very beautiful. Flowers on the box. Very beautiful. Right? The garland around the neck of the dead body. Very beautiful. Yeah. Yeah. So to us, yeah, this is, there's always sand in the sweet rice. Yeah. They're like, you know, so pessimistic. The sweet rice is wonderful, you know, I mean, what are you talking? Crunch, crunch, crunch. Yeah. Obviously, yeah. So yeah, they'll call us depressed and pessimistic and all this. And, you know, can we say? We say, you know, you're in a fool's paradise. You're a fool in fool's paradise. So that conflict between the materialist and the spiritualist is eternal. This is the conflict between the sura and the asura, the devotee and the demon. Right? That's we were just reading, right, this essay of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta about organized religion. And therein, you know, he makes an analogy between the person, the mundane materialist with his the empiricist, etc. He says, he calls him just Kamsa, you know. So he says, Kamsa is certainly always trying to find all kinds of empiric arguments, right, to establish atheism. And the only reason why atheism up to so far has not been successful is because we have failed to timely offer empiric arguments, and therefore the more fanatic part of society has become spoiled by false religious propaganda. Right? Anyway, things like that, you know, it's like these two classes are there. There's always the Kamsas and the Prahlads, you know, Hiranyakasipus and Prahlads. It's like Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said that, you know, Hiranyakasipu could not see Krishna anywhere, Prahlad saw Krishna everywhere, and we are in between. Yeah. No. Oh, come on. A flower is like, you know, freezing right now. You sitting home in like, you know, turn next to the heater here, you know, the flower is like, yeah, it's beautiful. Look at these flowers. They're all dry. They've been, these flowers have been in the desert for the whole week. Yeah. These flowers, you know, they've been like, yeah, well today they're going to get buried. It's a funeral. If they get replaced, he says, the undertaker says, you know. The pigeon's flying, and the hawk is flying above him, looking down at him, and thinking, there goes my breakfast. Yeah, and how many times? How many times? Till the hunter gets him. Yeah, till the hunter gets him. And meanwhile, the pigeon is always thinking, when is it going to happen? He's total anxiety. Look at the pigeon drinking water. You know? Why is he looking up all the time? Why is he not drinking? He's in anxiety. Fear. Animal existence is predominated by fear. Fear is the driving force in animal life. Prabhupada says. Fear. Yeah. Yeah. So it's like, you have to see, like, fear is like very present in the animal world. It's not that an animal is all the time afraid, but it's a big, big part of animal life is fear. Just fear. Huh? Yeah, but fly away, run away, you know, fear. Right. I don't understand, you know, there's all this kind of like, you know, imagine you would live like in a kind of dull state of consciousness. You can't figure out what's going on. It's coming at you. It's happening all the time. Every time from the dark, anything can come. Right? Anything. See, we're living in the illusion as human beings that at least, you know, we got it figured out, you know. We kind of like, you know, we've calculated it all and we've kind of covered ourselves from certain, like, you know, it's like we're kind of like, well, you know, even if it goes wrong, ha-ha. Right? But, animal, no. It's lost. More bewildered. More fear. Fear, yeah, more fear. Animal suffers. God, you want to come to Vrindavan? When are you coming to Vrindavan? We'll give you a tour. I'll show you. I mean, after you've been in India, you'll realize that animals suffer. I guess in India, everybody suffers, clearly. But then you realize here also everyone suffers. But in India you see it, really. It's not covered like here. It's out in the open. Right? The guy who's deformed, whose arm is grown attached to his body, right? The skin is one. So he has some sort of a wing instead of like an arm. You can meet him too on the train. Ready for takeoff. Yeah, horror stories. So, anything? No. Thank you. Okay, Krishna.com. Go on Krishna.com and look at a cartoon called Misery Loves Company. Just, you know. Yeah, you just see. Krishna.com entertainment and then Misery Loves Company. Click. You know, and see what happens. Off you go. Woo! Yeah. Okay. Okay. Don't tell them what it's all about. Krishna.com. Entertainment section. Misery loves company. Okay. Don't tell them. Don't tell them not a secret. Log on. No, you have to log on. There's only go upstairs. Go upstairs and log on, you know. If you can't wait. You're straight off this class. Log on, you know. What? Yes. Access to Krishna. Okay, thanks very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.